This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Rick. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be, yes.
It's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Sweet beans from Boston, so young and weird.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you here from the PTBN studios, of course, alongside, as always, my PIC, who's checking his Apple Watch, trying to steal the times from all the other podcasts out there in the world to keep us going strong, and that is Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to the longest-running episodic gold Apple Watch standard. We don't use regular Apple Watches. We use gold Apple Watches.
What idiots. What is it with Boston and these technological advancements with cheating?
I don't know. I don't know.
Video cameras on the sidelines and then Apple Watch conundrums. I am curious if they end up taking a harder stance on them. I mean, sign stealing is a thing. We get it. It's fine.
Sign stealing's been going on for fucking 100 years.
But keep it within
years.
The lines. Keep it within the lines. And, you know, if we can start using all kinds of technology and stuff, this goes crazy. And Senior was telling me tonight that, you know, he heard that because Manfred, one of his big things is around keeping pace of play and all that. And, like, this kind of stuff is slowing down the pace of play that he may kind of come down on them a little bit harder even for that reason, too.
Wow.
And it's funny because I guess Gary Sanchez, you know, he makes like a million mound visits, and they said that was like the reason why he was doing it. I mean, he does it all the time, so I don't know if that was valid or not.
Right.
But anyway, so that a lot of hair saying, who knows? But I'm guessing there'll be some kind of punishment. It's probably going to be a fine and draft pick or something like that. But we'll see if they make a tougher stance to really set a precedent. It'll be interesting.
Speaking of tougher stance, JR, this evening we leave. We go pretty far away from the office. And this was a quick turnaround. We were in the home office Monday for the Monday calendar wise, but last Monday, of course, for our November house show from Madison Square Garden. We had the holiday, the nice Thanksgiving holiday of 1986, and now we go 3,000 miles from where we normally are. For tonight, we bring you November 29th, 1986. Saturday night's main event. It was taped on the 15th. So it's a couple weeks old, but right. Still pretty relevant. From the Sports Arena in Los Angeles, California. First trip back here to this building, JR, since WrestleMania 2. So First time we've been here since April.
Do you think it felt like it made Saturday's main event feel like a bigger deal being in L.A.? I thought it was kind of cool.
Yes. No, absolutely.
It made it stand out. It felt like a special Hollywood episode, and Jesse plays into that big time. So I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. He did the cool open, and we had it. Yeah, no, it was pretty awesome. I agree 100%. And having it in such a cool place on the holiday weekend worked out well. And the crowd was actually, we'll talk about it, the crowd was actually pretty hot. Not bad for a usual California crowd. Yeah. And, of course, we'll head back to our home office next week for the final show of 1986.
I can't believe we're already done with 86. It feels like it was just doing WrestleMania 2, so it's definitely flown by. But it's been an interesting year, for sure. We'll talk more about it when we do our kind of year in review, probably at some point in early 87 when Kelly returns. But it's been a lot of fun. I'm curious. Mm-hmm. 87 is where I start to piece things together a little bit better, so I'm curious how some of that holds up. But, so Jesse opens the show, because we're in Hollywood. It's his spot.
Wait, no, before we go any further, because this was taped, the roster worked. So let's give them a quick where they were. One roster, one half, was at Market Square Arena in Indianapolis, where, of course, the Pacers were playing at that time. And all it says on the history of WWF.com is included World Wrestling Federation champion Hulk Hogan. So Hogan headlined that card. The other half of the roster had a doubleheader that day. They had a matinee at the Wacomico Youth and Civic Center in Salisbury, Maryland.
Jesus.
That was the matinee. We don't have a...
Summer Love there?
Yeah, no. We don't have a crowd there. Summer Love, yeah. Remember her? Here's your results. Sika pinned Dick Slater. Ray Rougeau fought Bret Hart to a draw. That must have been a pretty awesome match. Jacques defeated Jim Neidhart by disqualification. Coco Beware defeated Bob Orton Jr. Jose Luis Rivera lost. We won't tell you to who, but it was a guy that you'll be seeing pretty soon in early 87. Jake Roberts pinned Hercules. Why? Interesting.
That's odd, yeah.
And your Intercontinental Champion Randy Savage defeated the Hot Rod, Roddy Piper, by DQ. Oh, wow. How about that for a main event?
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
In the nightcap, a slightly bigger arena, the Baltimore Arena in Baltimore, Maryland, for the nightcap. The two singles matches between the Hart Foundation and the Rougeaus culminated in a tag match. We don't have results. These don't have results. Dick Slater against this, again, newcomer we were talking about that we'll see eventually. Pedro Morales against Sika. Well, there's good. Jake against Coco. Hercules versus Savage. What's going on here?
Yeah.
And the main event is between two guys who we're going to see later on tonight. So I'll hold off on that main event till we get to that match. So let's hop in.
All right. So we do open with Jesse welcoming us to L.A. And then we get promos from Jake Roberts, Randy Savage, Coco Beware, Roddy Piper, Hart Foundation, and Hulk Hogan. Vince and Jesse then join us in the arena and set the stage for the night. Vince asks about Jesse's newfound hair, and he says he's Hollywood and a pro sports announcer and owes no explanation. And Vince makes a wig joke, and it was a ridiculous wig.
It was bad. Yeah, it was bad.
But I think that was probably the point. Gene chats with Jake Roberts about his big title match tonight. Roberts torches Gene with Damian and cuts an intense promo about his challenge to Randy Savage. Jesse asks if Gene was holding a microphone or a vibrator, which is a weird way to open up this big episode of Saturday's Main Event. Gene is then with Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth. Gene asks Liz if she's afraid of snakes, and Savage cuts them off and says he's going to make boots and belts out of that creature. And he means, of course, Jake, not Damien, when he says the creature. And that does lead us to our very interesting opening match for the Intercontinental title as Randy Savage, the champion, battles Jake Roberts. And according to the Best of Saturday's Main Event DVD set released by WWE, Jake Roberts mentions a conversation they had with Dick Ebersol, of course, the NBC president, before his Saturday's Main Event match here tonight with Savage. In the interview, he says Ebersol came up to them and said, "Mr. Savage, Mr. Snake, if the ratings drop during your match, this will be the last time you're at Saturday's Main Event. You'll be back in Poughkeepsie doing local TV." Savage and Roberts are extra motivated to put on a great performance, and Roberts thinks it's one of his best matches ever. And Angelo Poffo agreed as far as Randy goes. I mean, again, he's probably trying to motivate these guys. You think he actually had the sway to get Randy Savage pulled off a Saturday's Main Event?
I know. Could you imagine? No. Sorry. Not happening. You want to keep your viewers, Dick?
Right. Odd.
Don't think so. That wasn't happening.
All right. So there you
that's
go.
Like saying that's like saying you know the 1980. Well, NBC didn't have. What sport did NBC? Well, NBC had baseball. Let's assume you know. The 86, American League Championship Series between the Red Sox and Angels, and Clemens makes a smart-ass comment, and Dick Ebersol tells John McMurray, "You can't start Clemens during the series." It's like, go away.
It is
Book
weird.
Your commercials. Talk to Lorne Michaels about
Saturday Night Live. Live into the ground. Was this when he was running it? Wasn't this around then?
Maybe. I don't think so. It was before this. It went back to Lorne. Dick ran it in the early 80s. This was with because by then, by 86, we talked about this, by this point is when the roster, you know, they got, you know, Carvey and Kevin Nealon and those guys and Dennis Miller, and the show started to pick up. The like 80 to 84, if it wasn't for let's be honest, if it wasn't for Eddie Murphy, the show wouldn't have lasted like 1982. Yeah,
right. Michaels returned in 85, so he had just come back.
No, if there wasn't for Eddie Murphy, SNL would have gone off the air by like 82, because the roster, all the, you know, the good people in the late 70s, Belushi and, you know, Jane Curtin and Bill Murray, they were all gone by then. And you pretty much had Eddie Murphy and a bunch of humps, Joe Piscopo and some of these other half funny guys. Once Lauren came back in 85, and then, you know, they loaded up with Carvey and Farley and you know, those guys, it got a lot better. But anyway, enough of NBC TV history. Let's move on.
Huge matchup here to open the show. Rare heel-heel bout. Lots of pressure on these guys, like we mentioned, by NBC and the company. Jake's an interesting spot. He's so over that they can't deny him like big spots like this, but he's such a great heel and such intensity. It's a tough spot to be. Savage, still a megastar, completely at ease in this character, just oozing confidence and charisma. Jake teases throwing Damian on Liz as the crowd chants DDT very loudly. Savage ducks behind Liz to dodge a snake and disrobes. We get some stalling as Jake unloads loads Damian into the sack, and Liz leaves, and we get right into it. Vince wonders who the fans will choose tonight, but Jesse says they're two of the most hated in the world right now. Savage grabs the arm and uses the hair for leverage, leading to Jake doing the same thing. Jake says Savage should worry about the snake in the ring and not the one in the bag. Jesse says that, rather. Jake works a side headlock, and the two use the hair to twist each other around. Savage whiffs on an elbow drop and dodges a DDT and slips to the floor. Jake follows him out, but Savage heads right back in, and Jake meets him with a boot to the gut, but Savage blocks another DDT and punches away. Jake runs into the knee lift in the corner for a macho two count. Savage alternates strikes and pin covers, but can't put away Jake yet. Jake lands some uppercuts, but Savage drives an elbow to the head and then another to the face for two. Savage keeps going for covers here, but Jake won't give in. Savage cuts off a comeback with elbows to the head and ties him in the ropes. As the ref tries to unhook Jake, Savage grabs a sack and throws it under the ring. After a break, Savage returns as Jake was freed up, and Jake buries him with a knee lift to a big pop. Jake goes outside and puts the sack back in the corner, but when he comes back in, he gets punched in the gut. Jake shrugs it off and levels the champ with a short arm clothesline for a near fall, and now the crowd is like completely behind Jake, chanting DDT. Jake gets a front suplex and laughs at Liz, but only gets a two count. Jake punches away, but Savage again blocks the DDT and rolls to the floor. Jake follows out, but Savage hides behind Liz. Jake goes to the sack, but Savage hits him with a knee from behind and heads up top and pelts him with a double axe handle. Savage pitches Jake back in and heads up top again and lands another axe for two. Savage goes right back on top, and this time Jake drills him with a punch to the face on the way down. Savage rallies with a knee that knocks Jake outside, and Snake pulls out the champ with him. They trade blows out there and head back in, but Savage catches him with kicks. The referee tries to get between them, but Savage just throws him across the ring, and then Jake does the same, sending him hard to the announce table, and to the timekeeper table. The bell rings for a double DQ as Savage grabs a chair. Jake grabs the snake and gets on Macho, but only for a split second as the champ and Liz bolt to the back. This is fantastic. Nonstop energy, great pacing back and forth. Savage is amazing with his quickness, just pouncing from move to move and jumping Jake any opening he had. Jake hung right with him. I thought he worked well for underneath. From underneath, which made sense because the fans were really behind him like the whole time. One of the best 90-minute event matches to date, easily. And you have the feeling they could have really went another 10 minutes at this pace, and it would have been just as great. A big match shows that Jake is a true force. He can work in the ring. He's due for a change. Savage is still a top-tier guy. Both delivered when they were challenged to do so and should be in line for a good push in 87. I went 3.5 on this, Scott.
I went 3.5 as well, and I said it to you guys today. I was this close. I wanted to give it 4 stars. Mm-hmm. I really did. And I know we don't do quarters. I probably would have given it 3.75. I would have. This match was amazing. Run times are a little vague with Saturday's main event. I mean, it says 9.5, and it probably was about that much. The best part about it was neither guy really worked face. Like, at one heel dissing another heel, and it was up to the crowd to decide what they wanted to do. That was the best part about the way they booked this. They left it up to us.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, Jake ends up working in the face role for most of the match, but I do wonder if they went out there without a plan. Like, if they were going to wait and see who the crowd is behind ahead of time and then audible the match into the heat segment that way. Like, if Jake came out and Savage got cheered, if they would have twisted the match around and let Jake control it, if they would have called out on the fly like that. I am curious how much they planned. Or was the company already getting ready to possibly turn Jake and asked, you know, okay, have him work underneath and let him kind of, let's see how it works with him in the face role. Because you do wonder if they were already starting those, you know, plans. Because the stuff with Hogan was earlier, right? Was that like October?
The stuff with Jake and Hogan? Yeah.
Yeah, their house show matches or whatever.
Yeah. It was like that little gap there. And then he gets one. I think he gets one in January, too. I thought he did, too.
Might be right. I think the Providence one is October. That was when Jim went. That was Jim's first live show.
Oh, nice. Well, he got a good one there. Yeah. They definitely wrestle again in January, like a couple weeks before the stuff with the guitar, and we'll get to that.
Actually, no, here it is. December 30th, Hogan defeats Jake by count out.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're not – it's not there in November – let's see. No, October was Hogan and Orndorff in a cage. So, yeah, December.
December. Okay. I thought it was close. I thought maybe they had one match in October, but I know they definitely had one in late December or early.
Well, that's
just
Providence. It could have been in October sometime, but.
I'll have to check Graham's site. Now, today, you've kind of swayed me a bit because today I thought this was a test match because I think creator or the bookers. To use the 80s term, the bookers knew that one of these guys was going to turn face at some point. And I thought this was a test match to decide which guy got cheered first. But I definitely think that they set it up for. And you know what the difference is, like which guy would get cheered faster would be Elizabeth. You know, who's going to get booed longer? The creepy guy with the awesome promos and the snake, or the guy who treats the hot chick like shit? You know what I mean? So,
well, it is the 80s. every coke out of Wall Street is probably cheering for Savage.
Well, that's true, yeah.
No, the, you know, the, I don't know. The and I think part of it, too, is Savage is now locked into the Steamboat stuff, too, as well. I mean, that's already happened now on TV. So they can't really turn him anytime soon. So I do think... I do think they had plans for Jake. I mean, I don't think – I think it's by design that they have him work as the face in this match. I do think that's part of, you know, what's going on. So I would say so. I don't think it's a test. I think they knew where they were headed, and I think that was shown by Savage beating the shit out of Steamboat. They weren't going to turn him right after that. So
no, I agree. I because this was taped on the 15th, and right, that stuff happened before even that. So I as the day went on, I thought about it, and then you just when I listening to your comments, I think it was meant for Jake to be kind of leaned more the baby face.
Yeah.
Two experienced Southern psychology guys. Let me delve into that. You have two guys who, for the most part, cut their teeth in the South. Obviously, Jake was in Georgia. He was TV champion, feuded with. He was in Crockett, and he was in Georgia,
feuded with Watts.
Yep, Mid-South, feuded with, and then he was in Georgia, feuding with Ronnie Garvin over the TV title. So Jake had Southern sensibilities, obviously Savage in Memphis. So you had two guys who, on top of the fact they're great workers, they knew how to tell a story just based on mannerisms, facial expressions, you know, the cock of a head, the way you walk, the way you flew yourself out of the ring. They knew how to fill the gaps psychologically.
They knew how to fill the gaps with the cock of the head.
Yes. They knew how to fill the gaps with Cock Robin. Mm-hmm. Doing that made the match even better because you had two guys who knew how to tell a story, and both heels didn't even hurt it. Again, for one of the few times maybe in the kayfabe era, Vince trusted the audience. They let the fans pick. Look, here's two heels, but two guys I know you kind of like because they're really good wrestlers. So we'll leave it up to you. We're gonna tease one guy a little more than the other, but we'll still leave it up to you. And in the end, they kind of rolled with it and went with Jake. But again, two good Southern psychology guys who knew how to tell a story, knew how to fill the gaps between moves, and it worked out. It worked out great. I think one of my favorite moments is Jake hitting the gourd buster and them not realizing neither Vince nor Jesse knowing what to call it. I thought that was pretty. I think they did that once before with what was it? What house show was it? Oh, it was it October? Yeah, it was October when Davey Boy put the what would be eventually Scorpion Deathlock, and then, of course, eventually the Sharpshooter. And they didn't know what to call it. Same thing here. Jake hit a sweet gourd buster on Savage.
And they admit it. They're like, oh, a front suplex. A
front
or whatever.
Drop something on his head somehow. And this time I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to yell at him because I don't think they even saw anybody do that before. So it was a sweet move, though. I mean, the ending wasn't great, but there was no other. I mean, whatever. This was a case where you kind of let it go because who cares? The match was awesome. Jake wasn't going to win, obviously, and Savage, you don't want Jake losing clean or winning clean, so, you know, fuck it. Do something
kind of shitty. No complaints at all with the finish here. It's
just
fine.
Do some shitty mess.
It was just to get these two guys a chance to really dominate and get over. I'm fine with that. I think it's a really good, I thought it was a fine finish. I thought it made a lot of sense. They let these guys go out there and be showcased. I thought it was cool. It was a cool moment to show that. All right, we're on national TV. We're in Hollywood. We get the executives here. Let's just let two of our studs go out and dominate.
That's exactly what it was. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And the other thing was that the way even Fink worded it, due to the extreme chaos by both competitors, this is a double. So they pretty much made it like we can't control these guys anymore. They're losing it. So they even worded it right to make it less of a shit finish. You know. 3.5 stars. I wanted to give it 4. If it went maybe 4 more minutes, I probably would have. And we don't give quarters. Otherwise, it would have easily been 3 3/4.
Yeah, it was borderline. It was close, but it was really, really good. I mean, it was, yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it really is. I think it's probably one of the best Titans main event matches we've seen so far.
Is it the best at this point?
I mean, I was trying to think off the top of my head. It's I can't think of all the matches.
We gotta look it up. But I don't think there's anything close to this. I mean, we had some good stuff earlier in the year.
I mean, I can look quick here. I don't see anyone from May of 85. There was none. October 85, nothing that touches it. This I'm just going by our grades at the time.
Right.
November 85, nothing close. December 85, we had Hogan Funk at 3 stars.
That was good.
Yeah, that was really good. March, Bulldogs Dream Team, 3 stars. I had that there. May, Hogan and JYD against the Funks. I have it 3 stars. And then that takes us to October. We had Bulldogs Dream Team at 3 stars again. I mean, yeah. Based on our grades so far, this is the best match in Saturday's Main Event history.
And
it's not really close.
It may sit here for a while.
Yeah.
It may sit here for a while. So
no, it's a good one. It's a good one. So, well, we're checking out if you haven't seen it. So, okay, absolutely. We revisit a clip now of the Slickster selling the contract of Hercules to Bobby Heenan, and it's entitled The Selling of Hercules with the graphic. Bobby wants to write a check, but Slick says he only deals in cash. They both put over Hercules, and Slick say he's only selling them because of the huge offer. He wouldn't be selling them otherwise. He thinks he's, you know, really good. They walk up to a bank teller, and Bobby withdraws a huge stack of cash. Slick hands over the contract, and it's a done deal. I love this. This was, like, so awesome that they took the time to do this skit. And it just gets over that these managers make deals and wheel and deal, and, you know, that they're both kind of slimy. They don't trust each other, but they're working together. You know, it's kind of neat. Like, Slick only doesn't want Heenan's bullshit checks, and Bobby wants the contract before he pays up because he didn't trust Slick. It was a cool moment. I like the cashier just, you know, handing over, like, thousands of dollars to these two idiots.
I like how it's just already sitting there. Oh, sure, here you go.
It's like, yeah, great. Well, it's kind of like it's his, you know, personal bank or whatever. So he's got a relationship. He called ahead. All right, so Gene then chats with Hercules and Bobby Heenan about their upcoming bout. Gene takes a dig at Bobby's credit as well. Gene then talks to Hogan about defending the title in his backyard in Southern California. Hogan does the usual stick and is ready to rock. Calling out Heenan as well, saying he'll knock down anyone that Heenan throws at him. I hung and bung on the Titanic, Hogan says.
So, you know, hung and bung. I noticed that too, actually.
Just hanging and bunging. So there you go. Hulk Hogan versus Hercules for the world title. Big time spot for Herc as he works his way into the national TV title bout and also puts over Heenan as a manager. I thought they did that well because he gets him a shot immediately after getting the contract. And if you remember, it's been nice continuity because on all the MSG stuff, when Hercules is on, they keep talking about how he wants a title match. So it was kind of well done. Hogan's still battling Paul Orndorff around the country, but he needs other guys like this to keep busy with. So it was cool having him mix it up with another Heenan guy. Herc is really juiced up here. Looks massive. I thought he looked like a star. I thought he had a really good presence. Like, if you're just tuning into NBC to check this out, this guy looks like a guy. You know, he doesn't look like a bum. Hogan has pretty much the full red and yellow now. Outside of the knee pad. So he's pretty much classic Hogan by this point. Yep. Vince and Jesse still calling Herc Hernandez here, even though we learned that we're dropping that name. After a break, we start with a test of strength, which Herc wins initially, but Hogan powers up and forces Herc down until the challenger cracks him in the chest with a headbutt and runs him to the corner. Herc clubs away with hard strikes, but Hogan shoots him into the buckle and lands a clothesline and right hands, followed by a knee lift. Bobby jumps on the apron, so Hogan chases him all around ringside. Heenan bails back outside as Hogan catches Herc with a big boot and slam. Herc dodges an elbow drop. Herc goes to work in the lower back as Jesse wonders why Dave Hettner is again the referee here for such a big match after he got clobbered and knocked out the match one match ago. Herc locks in a tight bear hug and releases Hogan and drops him with a hard backbreaker and then hoists Hogan up into the backbreaker rack across his back, shakes him around, and then drops him when he thinks Hulk gave up. Hebner tells Herc that Hogan never gave up, and Jesse just flips out. Vince says that Hogan's the only man that's ever withstood that hold. Herc angrily stomps around before eventually covering for two. The champ hulks up as Herc looks stunned and frustrated at what's happening. Like, he was just like, it was kind of cool. It's like he was really selling the moment that he's never seen this before, that Hogan's hulking up, but he's like lost as what to do.
Yep.
Hogan starts to unload right hands and an elbow and then slings Herc from corner to corner before chopping him down. And the crowd is just rabid now as Hulk drills Herc with a big boot and drops the leg for the win. As he celebrates, Jesse bitches and says he has the refs and Tunney in his pocket and Dirty F should switch to instant replay. A fun TV title match. I thought Herc looked really good, showed off his power and aggression throughout, and they protected his finisher a bit too while making him look kind of dumb on the same hand when he let go. Heenan bumped around like a nut. That was good too. And Hogan looks great as always, just a rock star. Really good start to a huge Saturday Night event. We have two high quality matches with plenty of big stars. I went 2.5 on this. And I will, well, let's talk about the match. I want to talk about Hercules, but go ahead.
Yeah. I also gave it 2.5. I thought it was awesome. Yeah, Herc definitely. I mean, again, and I said this last week with Kelly, with the three of us when we did the house show 5 days earlier. I love the Herc-Bobby combination. I think having Bobby made Herc a star immediately. And here we go. Excuse me. Just a short time later, now he's got a world title shot on national television in front of millions. So it worked out awesome. So good job by the bookers to put a Herc with Bobby because it worked out perfectly.
Yeah, it was a good
match. Yeah, the match is a good sprint. Hogan took a decent shit kicking though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Herc did a lot of offense.
Yeah. One thing I got to give Hogan credit for. Sometimes I feel like he looks almost like unbeatable on the house shows, but he does, you know, show some ass in these Saturday Night's Main Event matches. I mean, he does let the heel kind of, and we talked about Funk. He let Funk beat the crap out of him. And I mean, Herc dominated what seemed like pretty much the official time. According to Graham, was around 6.5 minutes. And I would say like 6 of it was Hogan taking a beating. And, you know, I'm not saying that Hogan, you know, has everybody in his back pocket, but I got to give Jesse credit. I mean, he like legitimately made, well, how do you know Vince he didn't? Just because it's him?
Right.
I heard him quit. Maybe the ref's an idiot.
Well, and he'd been knocked out earlier. Why is he even doing this match?
Yeah, why is he even doing this match? I was actually pretty impressed with that. That it could be legit believable.
Yeah.
You know, but obviously it's not. But still, though, you never know. But a good match. Great work by both guys. And you're right, Hogan. This is where, even though he does have the blue knee pads, which I thought was strange, because he wore the blue knee pads at the Garden on the on our previous show too, which I thought was kind of strange. But pretty much by 87, we don't see the white anymore. We don't see the very rare alternate blue AWA leftovers. He's pretty much, like I said, once we hit the turn of the year, he's pretty much yellow and red.
Yeah,
from here on,
real
out.
American yellow and red. We're pretty much, and I think even his matches, we'll see in 87. I'm curious how some of the MSG stuff that he's on holds up, because I feel like this is when, you know, into 87, maybe later in the year is when we start to get more of the Hogan formula too. We're still not fully there. We're getting a lot of, you know, more of the brawling and the sprinting with him. I'm curious when he really, really, really settles into that Hogan formula. So we're kind of climbing toward it. It's been fun seeing kind of non-formulaic Hogan, old school Hogan, but I think we're getting to the Hogan we all know.
Yeah, the formula of, you know, quick sprints to start, gets right. caught.
A lot of brawling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't have the big heat segment. You know what I mean? Like, you know, which pretty much modern Hogan is all heat and then the comeback. Like, we don't get, you know, we haven't had as much of that. So.
No. Yeah. And you don't see as much back and forth as you did in the beginning either. So,
let me ask you about Hercules.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I've been surprised because he's a guy that's pretty maligned historically as a worker. You know, I liked him as a character, but I never really held him in like super high regard. I liked Power and Glory. As a face, was kind of blah. He's kind of opened my eyes a bit because I always write like, oh, bad match on paper. And then he comes out and he's actually pretty good. Like he's been okay in a lot of these matches. Mm-hmm. He's had maybe one stinker, like his first match. But since then, he's been all around like that 2-star range. I thought he looked really good here. I'm curious if it's something when he turns face, is he just not good working underneath in the face role? But he's been aggressive and hard hitting. And I've enjoyed his matches more than I haven't since he's been around.
I agree 100%. I'll tell you why, because he's a good power heel that doesn't need to impress you with a myriad of a huge recipe of maneuvers. He's just got to deal, you know, power slams, clotheslines, you know, kind of some thick grappling like headlocks and stuff, and then the backbreaker. So, or the full Nelson, as we'd see eventually. He doesn't have to do much of anything else, and he sells it. He works it well. He puts over his moves. And he hasn't had to deal with a lot of, I mean, we won't go through them all now, but like you said, maybe one slug on the house show circuit that we've had to deal with at the Garden, maybe one stiff. But other than that, he's gotten himself in some good company. And again, I stress this immensely, and I said it last Monday, and I'm saying it tonight. Having Bobby makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
You know, when he was Blassie had him, and Blassie, when he started, he was kind of, you know, he was cooked anyway. And Slick was,
He's just not there yet. He's not established. I mean, Heenan's established as the premier manager right now. So it's you know, it makes a big difference when you're with Bobby buys you. It's a bigger difference than, you know, being with Slick, who just kind of took over for Blassie. And I think Slick's a great manager, and he'll prove that he can be a main event level manager in a couple of years. But he's just not there yet. He's just working his way in. So it definitely elevates Hercules in the eyes of many to go from Slick to Bobby at this point.
Yep. I agree, and I think that's the final piece that makes him a good heel. And this was a good match between, you know, Hogan. Who, let me ask you this: it's been now we're coming up on 3 years. You know, 3 years, it's a long time. We'll get to that. And you know, Hogan has wrestled solid title matches, but again, we haven't seen the Hogan formula yet.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think,
and we
even
have
after
spots, but not consistent,
right? Do you think that it was just Hogan? Like, listen, I need to. I don't know how to word it.
Yeah, no, he needed to cool it. I mean, he was gonna wear down. Yeah, break down. I think the formula worked. So once they discovered what worked, that he didn't need to go crazy and brawl and bleed and, you know, throw bombs over every night, that he could just kind of get worked over for 10 minutes, come back, hit the leg drop, and get out. Like, and no one got tired of it for 4 years. Nope. So I think I think they stumbled into it and were like, oh, fuck, all right, good. This is a way to preserve Hogan's body, which he needed, and also still have an effective main event. So probably a combo of a few factors.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think they realized that, you know, this guy's got to go on promotional stuff and show up at, you know, media events and stuff, and he can't be all broken down. And
right.
You know, they don't want him. They don't want to have to deal with like Bruno in 71, where, you know, I got to take 4 years off. You know, it's
right.
Can't do that. So I think that I like your terminology that he has stumbled into the formula. Yeah. That's pretty funny. So anyway, there you go. Hulk Hogan retains his World Wrestling Federation championship in a pretty solid match against Hercules.
Indeed. So now we go backstage. Earlier today, Jesse the Body caught up with Cowboy Bob and Jimmy Hart, his favorite local restaurant. Bob is shirtless in his kilt at the restaurant.
So strange.
Jimmy talks about Piper stooping low and using a weapon on him and his crew. Orton says he wasn't friends with Piper and that Piper used him and he hid behind him. But tonight, Piper has no friend to help him out. We then get a very touching music video showcasing the friendship between Piper and Orton. I wonder what song was used in reality for that music video. Do you know?
I was trying to look it up. I even tried to Shazam it today when we were, and nothing came up.
Well, I mean, so that was probably a dub, I'm guessing, by the network. I'm curious if it was just like a real song from the time that they used, you know what I mean?
Mm. I'll have to find it. Yeah. I think Greeny's actually going to look it up because I bet you Graham might have it.
And if not, I wonder if someone's going to have the original of that thing. But
yeah.
Gene then chats with Piper, who doesn't agree with Orton's statements. He talks about all the stuff he did to help the Cowboy while mocking him all the time that he's talking about him. He also calls Morocco Fat Albert and says tonight he'll take care of Orton and doesn't care about all his buddies attacking him. So here we go. The former best friends, maybe lovers, explode here as Roddy Piper battles Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. I guess we'll recap really quickly. Roddy Piper, of course, finally gets his in-ring opportunity against Orton after attacking Adonis on the last night's main event. And, of course, Adonis going away for a bit. Piper had vowed to come after Morocco and Orton, the other two men involved in the injury. On 10/18, Jimmy Hart gave Piper some gifts that he was not pleased with, including a pink cowboy hat and a rope. Piper stole the rope so he could hang himself. Piper ends up tying up Hart and pouring mouthwash in his mouth before jumping off the stage, indicating his knee was better and ready to fight. And, of course, Orton donning the kilt to mock the hot rod. So another big match here for this LA special.
We found it. What we heard today on the network was not probably the right song, but apparently it's Clarence Clemens, who was Bruce Springsteen's sax player, and Jackson Browne's "You're a Friend of Mine."
Okay. Well, it sounds like that's going to be our song going into break, so everyone enjoy
that's
it.
Right.
Enjoy it. So Orton is out with Jimmy and Morocco as well, and of course also has a kilt on. Morocco does. Piper marches out defiantly to a big pop, and we're ready to go. Vince talks about Adonis making a surprise return earlier today, attacking Piper in the pit on TV. The ref is Dave Hepner, I should say, yet again. Talks to Morocco, hops on the apron as Orton backs Piper to the corner. Piper throws a right hand at Morocco, but Hepner then throws him out of ringside, pissing off Jesse, who's just had it with Hepner tonight. Three straight matches of his bullshit. Piper unloads a wild flurry on Orton and then buries him with a bulldog. Orton begs off, but Piper comes right at him and bites him before shooting him hard to the corner. Piper pokes him in the eyes and then lays in more hard punches with a big knee lift for two. Piper drops his head on a whip and Orton punches him in the throat. and then starts to work the leg in midsection, but Piper comes back with a big club. Piper shoves Orton into Jimmy Hart, rolls up Ace for the win. Borderline squash, honestly. Piper just kicks the shit out of him. Tons of heat, though. Wild, fun brawling with by offense, offense by Piper. Piper just overwhelmed Orton completely, and it fit perfectly with the storyline. In a fun segment that keeps Piper's issue with the Hart boys burning hot and gets another star into a spotlight moment on the show. I went a star and a half, even though this is basically a squash. Pretty much just the heat was so good, and the brawling was so good. And you could tell that, you know, Adonis is back, and now Morocco and Orton again pushed to the back of the line because he just squashes him here. A couple weeks ago when Adonis was gone, they probably don't do a squash like this because they need to keep Orton kind of hot for the feud. But they clearly just were using him now as a device between Piper and Adonis.
Mm. Yeah, your official time, well, Graham has 3:48. Yeah, the Earl Hebner thing is hilarious. And kind of a mess of a match. But what were we really expecting, to be honest with you? You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it was what it was supposed to be. So, kind of a messy brawl. I gave it a star and a half, as well as you did. It was what it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a mess, and it was a mess. And Piper right now is molten hot right now, and giving Hogan a run for his money in terms of pops, that's for sure. Again, fan base right now is very interesting. It's almost kind of modern day thinking. Obviously they were kind of set up for Piper to turn face, but he was even getting pops. We talked about it back in April. He was getting pops at the end of the boxing match at WrestleMania 2. So you knew that they were tired of booing him and they were ready to see like Hot Rod be this way with other heels, you know. And he is now. So I think we're ready for Adonis. I mean, I'm sure he will fight Morocco down the line. But it's true. Like, Piper's kilts were, you know, decent length, but these two, they do look like prom dresses. That's how fucking long they are. Yeah, pretty funny, but an ugly match. And it is true, though. Like, weren't there any other referees, or was that just a plot point for Jesse to bitch all night?
No, the only thing I think of is that I really think they view this as a big night. I mean, November is kind of a sweeps time, you know? So I don't know if holiday weekend, kind of a sweeps month, Ebersol there, LA, maybe they just wanted the most trusted ref in the ring for the big matches. I'm not sure. I don't know. Because he doesn't do the last two kind of garbage matches. So that's all I can think of.
Yeah. No, that's all I can think of, too. But anyway, you know, halfway decent match. 3:48, nothing crazy. Piper gets the win. And the crowd loves it. Mm-hmm. It's been a fun first three matches. Why don't we take a break? We got, 1, 2, 3 matches left with some interview stuff. Fun show so far. I mean, really fun show. I mean, arguably one of the best, you know, first halves of a Saturday's main event we've had in a while.
Oh, for sure. And as you are hearing under us, it is that love song, Roddy Piper and Bob Orton. But what you heard to open the show, of course, was some Steely Dan, kind of, I don't know, godfathers or uncles, god uncles of Yacht Rock. One of the more played bands on the channel, of course. Scott, why don't you talk about the sad passing a couple days, or last week, I guess, right? So
yeah, it was over the weekend. Yes, one half of Steely Dan, Walter Becker, passed away. I think he was battling cancer. He died over the age of, I think he was 68. I mean, we joke about Steely Dan and how pretty much 80% of their catalog is on Yacht Rock. And if I ever hear Deacon Blues again, I might jump off my fire escape. But in all seriousness, Steely Dan is one of the most revolutionary bands of the 70s. They had an infusion of I mean, if you're listening, I mean, JR has listened to more than enough of their stuff. Mm-hmm. A great mix of jazz, some hot blues, good pop, rock, just all sorts of different genres. They were artsy guys, you know. They were like, you know, 70s college students who had like kind of that art sensibility and put it in their music. And pretty much for 8 straight years from 72 to 80, they were red hot. They had some great albums, some great songs, which again you hear on Yacht Rock. And they were odd guys in the sense that they weren't big live guys. Like they toured, but they were very they weren't like, you know, like Elton or Billy Joel or somebody like that, or, you know, the kind of guy that talks to the crowd and pumps crowds up. They just kind of play and say hi and then play again. And they didn't tour a lot in the 80s, and then they kind of got back together in the mid-2000s. And they actually just played, I think it was last year, they just played like a 2-week stretch at the Beacon Theater in New York. doing different albums and stuff. And so they kind of got back in the groove a little bit. But Walter Becker had been sick for a while. Donald Fagen, of course, is his partner. Of course, JR listens to, what is that, IGY? Is that song?
God,
What a Wonderful World. That song is terrible. But Walter Becker passed away at the age of 68, and one half of one of the kind of the coolest 70s band, Steely Dan, is gone. So Yacht Rock will be still on Channel 70 for a couple more weeks, and then, of course, you can hear them all winter on, what is it, 311?
Yes, but the summer of Yacht Rock here on the Place to Be podcast is over, so we're not going to...
Yes.
We'll not be playing...
No more Steely Dan.
Yes, well, you heard it to open the show, but otherwise, we're not going to have any more. So, all right, let's take that break. When we come back, we will wrap up the rest of this series. Perfect.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
Our Nation, we are back taking a look at the November 1986 Saturday Night's Main Event. It's been a doozy so far. Mm-hmm. And Scott Criscolo, there are many pundits out there that may say you give pods a bad name. Now, I don't necessarily agree with them. I think you do an okay job here on these shows. Been going on for, you know, 460-something episodes. You're hanging in. You're doing all right.
I don't think
they're right. Just like I didn't think Bon Jovi was right when he said that you give love a bad name. I thought he was wrong on that, too. I think you give love just a fine name. And that is the song you hear playing underneath us tonight. That is John Bon Jovi. He of the spiky hair and scarves and gourmet restaurants today in Arena League football. But back in the day, he was rock icon, I guess. Anyway, talk about him and other things in the Pop Culture Corner.
Yes, an abbreviated one this week because last Monday's show we pretty much was only 5 days ago. Yeah. So there are some things we'll skip tonight, but we will not skip this because today is Saturday, the 29th, 1986. So we have a fresh Billboard Top Hot 100, and here's your number one song. We talked about it on Monday because the multi-platinum album Slippery When Wet is out, and this is Bon Jovi's first single off it, You Give Love a Bad Name, one of many we'll hear over the next 7 months or something. I mean, at least there's going to be at least three more songs, I think, if I remember correctly. At least three more songs, we'll see. So he is number one. Number two was last week's number one. I'm only human, of flesh and blood. Yes, Human by the Human League, which was last week's number one, slips one spot to number two. True Blue by Madonna is number three. Number four, one of our favorite yacht rock ballads, Next Time I Fall by Peter Cetera with Amy Grant. Number five, Hip to Be Square by Huey Lewis and the News. Number six, and JR, I'm going to have to use this bet eventually because it's been getting in my head the last couple days. Word Up by Cameo.
Yes,
Cameo. And number seven, another great song because it's one of our favorite guys, Boston with Amanda.
My name is Amanda.
Number eight, The Way It Is by Bruce Hornsby and The Range. Number nine, Love Will Conquer All by Lionel Richie. And number 10, and I hope we get a week when this is number one because this will be a fantastic bed song to play. The Bangles, Walk Like an Egyptian, is in the top 10. So there we go. And just a side note, number 11, another great song that we may eventually play, little Wang Chung, Everybody Have Fun Tonight. So an extra there. That was number 11. So there's your top 10 that came out on this day, November 29th, 1986. And your number one song is You Give Love a Bad Name by the band Bon Jovi. Holiday weekend, JR, so at least two movies are out, and one did utterly fantastic, one of the greatest sci-fi movie and TV series of all time. But first, the number two song, 1,579,260. I believe this is yours and Mr. Machado's bar band. It is Solar Babies.
Okay.
I could see him with
Did
a...
Did we sing Somewhere Out There, the theme to Aladdin?
Exactly, and all the other Disney songs that all meld into one.
All right. In a bleak post-apocalyptic future, most of Earth's water has been controlled. The Eco Proctariat, the paramilitary organization, governs the planet's new order. Orphan children, mostly teenagers, live in orphanages created by the Protectorate? Protectorate?
Protectorate. I thought you were going to say proctologist.
Been a long day. Designed to indoctrinate new recruits into... Fuck this movie. Starring Richard Jordan, Jamie Gertz, Jason Patrick, Lucas Haas, James LeGros, Adrian Pastor, Sarah Douglas, Terrence Mann. That's about it. Willoughby Gray.
Jesus. Lucas Haas. Who else did you say? Jason, what is this? What is this? Fucking The Lost Boys? It's like the same like five guys that were in that movie, too.
James LeGros.
James LeGros. All right. And our number one movie of the weekend, we knew it was Thanksgiving weekend, so we knew it was going to be a big box office blockbuster. And this made $109,713,132. It was Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. One of the best of the series, as a matter of fact.
Would it hurt your feelings if I told you I'd never seen any of these?
No, not at all. You're a moderate sci-fi guy. You're not a junkie. It's okay. Good. I highly recommend watching them, though. They're very good movies.
Fuck, they are
very good movies.
Mark Mazzango would probably cry if I told him.
I'm sorry. I know.
In 2286, an enormous cylindrical probe moves through space, sending out indecipherable signal and disabling the power of ships it passes. that takes up orbit around Earth. It signals the disables the global power grid and generates planetary storms, creating catastrophic sun-blocking cloud cover. Starfleet Command sends out a planetary distress call. It warns starships not to approach Earth. And Star Trek shit happens from there, of course, starring, hang on, all the way down the bottom here. There's a lot of crap.
Usuals.
Yeah, actually, it doesn't have the list of the... right here. It's done differently. Of course, William Shatner is James Kirk, Leonard Nimoy, DeForest Kelly, Catherine Hicks, Nichelle Nichols, George Takei.
Walter Koenig.
James Doohan.
James Doohan. The whole gang. The whole band. This was the one, folks, with the whales. If you're a Star Trek fan and Glenn Butler would be very disappointed in you.
I know Glenn, too. Him is angry at all the Star Trek people.
This was the whale movie, for those that are interested. Of course, the common thing with that series is the odd movies were bad and the even movies were good. As a matter of fact, I'm going to see Sunday night. A buddy of mine from work and I are going to see. It is the 35th anniversary. I mentioned this to Glenn. The 35th anniversary of Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan, which is probably the best of the whole bunch, and it's playing in theaters this weekend. So I'm going to check it out Sunday night. I remember seeing the movies when I was I'm not saying. Anyway,
the most I know about Wrath of Khan is how many times Seinfeld was referencing it.
Yes. So there you go. So the number one movie this weekend, because it was a holiday weekend, obviously weekend for big movies. Star Trek IV: The Wrath of Khan. That's Star Trek II. Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home. Now we're not doing we will not be taking the field because as we normally do, we usually do the previous week's games, not the week coming up. And of course, it is the next day. And I know there were games on Thursday, but also since Mr. Nelson obviously is not here, we will eschew this week's NFL and we'll do the next NFL week when we do the December house show. So we'll do. I think it probably was like week 15 or 16. But last week, JR, you were on. Let's hope the All-Star break here doesn't curtail your momentum.
No, I'm hot, red hot, perfect.
Big week last week for you, my friend. Jimmy the Greek style, baby. 14 for 14. All right, there were a crap load of NHL games, but I won't go through all of them. I'll just do the teams that we care about. Our Bruins, JR, 6-2 winners at home over Buffalo. Kelly's Flames, 5-4 winners over Chicago, and of course our other adopted team, JR, the Great Whale of Hartford. They won big, 7-5 over the Canadians at the Forums. A lot of goals scored on this Saturday night of Thanksgiving weekend. And so all three of our teams, the Whalers, Bruins, and Flames, all with victories. I guess Pete's in here, too. What is he like? We'll add everybody. I'm sure Pete's a Blackhawk fan. They lost 5-4 to Calgary. And D'Amato's Rangers played to a 5-5 tie against the Penguins. So there you go. In the NBA, there were games on this weekend. Of course, the last week, our last corner, the NBA had off. There were six games. The only one I'll mention, the high scorer of the day, of course, we'll talk about this a lot over the next 5 years, number 23 that wore black and red for the Chicago Bulls, Mr.
Staying
Michael
in the
Jordan. Lex Luger dropped 40, but as it was for most of the 80s, Jordan would have a big game and the Bulls would lose. He scored 40, but the Golden State Warriors beat the Bulls out in Oakland 113-106. The rest of the night, Dallas wins, Nets beat Houston, Milwaukee wins big, the Knicks lose at home to Cleveland, and the Bullets beat San Antonio. Your standings at this point. In the in the Atlantic, the Celtics, the defending world champions, a half game ahead of the Sixers. Hawks lead the Central at 11-3. Mavericks lead the Midwest at 10-5, and the Lakers with the best record in the league at 11-2. And before we wrap up, JR, we haven't had this in a while. A sad death in the world of movies. One of the greatest actors in the history of cinema passed away on this date. He was pretty well known, very well known, actually. Probably, again, one of the maybe two or three greatest actors of all time. If you're a big Hitchcock fan, he was in a myriad of them. Of course, most people remember North by Northwest when he was running through the field while the plane was trying to kill him. Cary Grant, one of the greatest actors of all time, died at the age of 82 from a massive stroke.
There you go.
But Cary Grant, one of the greatest of all time. Great movies. Again, if you're a big Hitchcock fan, he was in Suspicion, Notorious, To Catch a Thief, North by Northwest, four of them. And Alfred Hitchcock, who was kind of a weirdo, did say, though, that the only actor he ever really truly enjoyed working with was Cary Grant. So dead at the age of 82 on this date, November 29th, 1986. And that's your pop culture report, JR. Back to L.A.
Back to ring. Gene talks to Piper in the locker room. Piper isn't pleased yet as Adonis and Fat Albert are still hitting him in the head. This is a small victory. Gene talks about how Piper has become a big crowd favorite, and Piper says he isn't running for president. He just fights to beat people. He's beaten Adonis in the past, taking a pink cowboy hat off Orton, and says those boys are wearing skirts, but he wears a kilt. Gene then talks to the Hart Foundation and says a win here will get them close to a tag team title shot. And they plan to defeat the bees by clipping their wings and nabbing their sting. So, there you go. These teams have been battling for quite a while at some point. And Brian Blair once indicated he thought these two teams wrestled somewhere between 300 and 600 times in the mid-80s, which is probably kind of believable. And then is the Killer Bees battling the Hart Foundation. Pretty fun tag match on tap to pad out this big card. After languishing for most of 86, the Hart seems to be on the verge of maybe finally breaking out and climbing the ladder. We're getting there. The Bees have had a good run in 86, well-utilized and protected within the division. Hearts are more into their classic neon and pink and black now, so that's pretty much established as their colors. Hart and Brunzell open up as Jesse notes the importance of this one as the Bulldogs sit back and await the winners. Brunzell breaks a stalemate with a high knee, and the Bees quick tag and work the arm. Vince says the Bees are controversial at times due to their masks, and we get an inset interview between Gene and the masked Bees who play games with Gene to get the gimmick over. The Bees, really keep Brett off kilter until the Hitman escapes and tags in the Anvil. The Bees work over the Anvil's arm as Jesse randomly calls Dick Ebersole an idiot. Brett turns the tide by catching Brunzell with a knee to the back as he hit the ropes, and the Hearts go right to work, double-teaming and pummeling. Jesse's back to bashing Heppner for his slow counts, as this poor bastard has worked four straight matches now at this point. Anvil tags in and buries Brunzell in an impressive dropkick as Vince puts over the new look of the Hearts. The Hearts keep double-teaming and using heel tactics, baiting Blair in to distract the ref along the way. You know, I wonder if these are filmed out of order and that the matches without Heppner were actually in between the matches with Heppner. Maybe he didn't do four in a row. We'll see. I don't know if you go check Graham. Maybe Graham has it. If you look at the taping. Brett slings Brunzell hard to the floor, and after break, Brunzell is pulling himself back inside, getting a sunset flip on his way back in. Brett stomped him to maintain control and tagged Anvil, shrugged off a comeback, and clubbed away some more. Brett tags in, and Brunzell gets a backslide for two, and then levels Brett with a fantastic dropkick. Anvil tags in and cuts off Brunzell with a front face lock, and we get a missed tag by the ref, which allows both Bees getting hammered on the floor. The Bees gather out there, duck under the ring, and put on their masks. Blair slips in and works over Anvil, and Brett, as Vince and Jesse are all confused over who's who. Blair gets a sleeper on Anvil as we spot Lee Marshall at the timekeeper table, because they're in L.A. He was there at WrestleMania 2. Brett clobbers Blair from behind to break the hold, but as the ref is with the Hitman, Brunzell sneaks in, switches spots with Blair, and small packages Brett for the win. Jesse's just pissed. The crowd loves it. A great tag match with classic execution done perfectly. I was shocked at the finish, though. It seemed to be setting up the Hearts as slotted contenders for the Bulldogs this whole time, and then the Bees nabbed the win. The mask thing is kind of more suited for heel team, but the fans seem into it, and I guess at least they're similar enough in build that it kind of works. Strong match with a very weird finish. I went 3 stars because I really enjoyed the match, but I was confused why the Hearts didn't get the win here.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I gave it 3 stars. The match was very, very good. I mean, you had two teams you didn't expect. Two teams, national television, you weren't expecting a stinker. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, definitely not. They have great chemistry. I'm just surprised. Why? You're building the Hearts clearly for the Bulldogs, the way that everything's going. Just a weird decision.
I agree, and I'm trying to pan here. I think these were in order because I don't think the... let me see here. November 15th. Here we go. All right, according to Graham, this is the order. Now, these were the matches before the taping started. Tito pinned Mr. X. Sika pinned Seviafi. Oh, Christ. Jerry Monty pinned Jack Kruger. Oh, crap.
Jerry Monty? God. Wasn't he a friggin' crooner? Nissan Villare?
That's Lou Monty. And our pals the Karate Kid. Our pal the
Job
Karate
1-2-3.
Kid. The Karate Kid was back.
Oh, God.
Him and Farmer Pete defeated Lord Littlebrook and Butch Cassidy.
I'm
and then...
just a gigolo. Everywhere I go.
And just a gigolo wrestling Lord Littlebrook. Did he? Do you think he got his? Well, this was before that. This was taped before the house show. So,
it's time for Jerry Monty and the Montettes here at the Wolf Den, Mohegan Sun.
Or we can go to the other bar and go see Jerry Monty and the Montettes. As it almost sounds like you said. So according to Graham, these all went in a row. So
Bibbidi bobbidi zibbidi bobbidi bop. So they were in a row?
I'm Jack Kruger. So, anyway, I think they all went in a row. So.
Okay, so Earl was, I mean, I keep saying Earl. Dave was working hard then. All right, what did you think of this match
so,
here?
The match is fantastic. But the ending is real bizarre. I don't know where, I mean, it's easily the B's biggest win to this point.
I mean, the B's are which protected. Which is funny. Well, like, they are protected. So it's not like they're a job team. My issue, and I'm curious, I'll shut up in a minute, but I'm really curious about, like, their plans for the Hearts. You know, like, I get that they're protecting the Bees a bit. They're believable to win. They're getting over the mask gimmick. Maybe they thought it'd be fun for Science Man event, but the Hearts are really, this is the start, stop. And based on the MSG and the commentary here, you think they'd line them up for the Bulldogs because the Bees aren't going to go feud with the Bulldogs. So why build this up as, like, a big top contenders match and then they don't even win?
I know. It's just so bizarre. I say this a lot on the house shows when we were with Kelly, that sometimes just like as great as matches are, the results are head scratchers.
Right.
I mean, does that mean, because they in essence said at the beginning of the show that this was an elimination match. In essence, the modern day version would be a number one contenders match. So would we get Bulldogs Bees? I mean, really? I mean, it's okay. I mean, the match probably be unbelievable. But is that what they were going for? Or was this just a national TV match to get a cheap pop?
Maybe they figure it doesn't matter too much, but it is weird. I mean, you would think that
it was very
being
weird,
on national TV, why spend all the time with the commentary and the hype, you know, talking about it being like a big contenders match? I guess that's my question. Like, why hype it that much if you're not going to go through with it? Just don't even talk about it. You know what I mean? Just whatever. Just have the Bees win and it is what it is. Don't even bother bringing it up that it's a big contenders match.
Right. I just, it's really strange. So I don't know if Bulldogs Bees, maybe we'll have to look at Graham's site. I don't know if Bulldogs Bees ever actually happened for the tag titles. I don't know. But very weird match. It does kind of protect the Hearts because they did get screwed.
Right.
So, but I think, honestly.
Yeah, I guess you can say they got hoodwinked.
Flim-flammed, bamboozled. But I do also think that they were thinking about holiday weekend sweeps. Everybody's watching. Everybody's home for the holidays. Everybody's watching. It did a 9-7, which is pretty fucking good. So I bet you they wanted to have like a happy night with happy matches. I mean, we're 4-4 with baby faces.
Right.
So I think they were just trying to like sweeten up the show for
because
they got a big number.
Yeah, and the mask thing to get over with the crowd is showing off the gimmick and the thing. I get it. It's just why hype it so much as a big contenders match.
Exactly. It's more in the
presentation than the actual result.
No, I agree with you 100%. I think they creatively probably tipped their hand there and went too far. But I think they were just booking, you know, for the sake of giving everybody a fun, you know, happy show with everybody home on a holiday weekend. So the Bees win. Your runtime, they said it was about 9 minutes-ish, according to Graham. So
that was a good match. And they always have good matches. All right, we go backstage. Me and Jeans with Coco Beware talking about his Saturday's Main Event debut tonight. Coco and Frankie are fired up, want to go all over the world and make some jokes about Russia. And then we head back to the ring as Coco is set to battle Nikolai Volkov. And another about here is Coco set to show off on national TV against the fading Volkov. Nikolai and Slick are in the ring, and Volkov sings the anthem as usual, but stops short because the fans are booing. We get a quick cut in from earlier where Jesse chatted with Sheik and Nikolai, who talk about feeling good and looking good and why money is important. Nikolai says Slick is an honest man and is number one in his book. Slick has a cast on and his arm in a sling, which we don't really find out why. Back to the ring, Coco dances about bringing that energy again, firing up the crowd, and we finally have a new referee here. Hebner's out. Nikolai attacks before the bell and stomps and clubs away in the corner. Coco dodges a charge and peppers Nikolai with right hands and takes him over the flying head scissors. Coco follows with a pair of drop kicks for two, but Nikolai comes back with a shitty spinning kick and then drops Coco across the top with a hot shot. Nikolai slams Coco down but misses a leaping knee drop. Coco heads up top and hits a missile drop kick for two. Nikolai kicks away as Jesse says Coco has used up his arsenal. He may be in trouble now. Nikolai gets a press slam backbreaker but picks him up at two and then slams Coco and chats with Slick. And that allows Coco to roll him up for the win. Nothing here. Nikolai looks fucking terrible. Coco looked really good too.
Mm-hmm.
Opposite Nikolai. But the finish was kind of dumb. It made it look like Coco had zero chance if Nikolai wasn't stupid and talking to Slick. You know, like, why not just let him... If you don't want Nikolai to lay down clean, let Coco have a match with somebody you can just kill. You know what I mean? Like, just... Let him whack someone else like he did with Jimmy Jack Funk at MSG. Just give him something like that so he can win strong. Like, why? They've been presenting him pretty strong so far. Why do you have him get dominated have Nikolai shrug off all his offense, and then Nikolai standing around talking to Slick and gets rolled up. It was kind of just a lame finish.
It was idiotic. I mean, our last two were just fill out the 90 minutes. Really, it's really all it was. Greeny just looked up.
I went half a star on that, by the way.
Yeah, I did. I think I did as well. Let me just bring up my thing. I did. Yeah, I did half star as well. So getting back to the previous match quickly, Greeny just checked that. The Killer Bees got their title shot, and this actually kind of makes sort of sense, JR. The Killer Bees did not get their title shot.
By the way, when did Greeny become like Stat Boy on Around the Horn? He's fucking. I like it. He's right in the booth. He's like our producer. He's right in the booth with the facts right away.
It's got, like, Rosenberg. March 15th, 87. We'll leave it at that.
Okay.
So it kind of makes creative sense, but we'll tell everyone that when we get there. Okay. Yeah, this was a shit show. Coco, I got to tell you, Coco was getting plugged like a legit guy. Yeah. Like, he wouldn't turn into what he would eventually turn into.
No, we said it last week at the MSG. He's been well presented.
Yeah, absolutely. And even better here. Nikolai just looks fucking horrendous. I mean, it's really bad. He's getting the bad, that stupid, although I did like the 1980. I always like, because he used to have a sweater back in the day. Now it's the windbreaker that says 1980 Moscow Olympics.
I like them both. I don't know which I like better. I like the sweater and the jacket.
I like both, too. I think I like the sweater a little bit more. But, I mean, the match was nothing. It was the shits.
No, it was
just get Coco over. Yeah. And, yeah, that was it. So 5 for 5 for babyfaces now.
Well, the opener wasn't a babyface. 4 out of 5.
Oh, that's true. But it was the guy they want. Well, yeah, that's true, I guess.
Yeah, it was Double DQ. So whatever.
Double DQ.
Yeah. Okay. Gene talks to Hulk Hogan about his earlier victory, and then he chats with Morocco and Fuji. Morocco said he only took this match on tonight so he could be here to protect his buddy, Cowboy Bob, and Jimmy Hart from Piper. And then Fuji sings an old Rebel song as they walk away.
Yeah, it was hilarious.
It was pretty good. And Morocco is here in our final match of the night, battling the Rebel, Dick Slater. The Rebel's on the scene with the Confederate flag draped on his shoulders. Another throwaway squished in here late. After the break, the match is already underway as Morocco's pummeling Slater with hard blows to the head and back. Morocco's laying the wood, but Slater slips free from an airplane spin and gets a roll-up for two. Slater cuts down Morocco with a pair of right hands and follows with some elbows and boots, and then heads outside and comes off with an elbow to the head. Slater argues with Fuji, but grabs a side headlock. To control. Morocco breaks free, and as Slater hits the ropes, Fuji cracks him with the cane. Morocco misses an elbow drop, but levels Slater with a hard clothesline for the win. Given the time constraints, this wasn't that bad. Slater actually looked pretty good and was definitely wasted in this role. Morocco's Morocco, but in short doses, like, this is where he's best. He has plenty of energy. He's not just kind of getting lazy. They chugged along to the finish. I thought it was maybe one match too many tonight. Like, I give them credit for wanting to explain why Morocco was here. He takes the match so he could be in town. Like, that's cool. We probably could have done without this or the Coco match. Like, I don't think we needed both. They both ended up getting really squeezed in late here and rushed. I think we could have went without them. But I went half a star on this one as well.
So did I. It wasn't much. You know me. Love Morocco. But it went, it was a sprint. I don't like babyface Dick Slater. I think he's a better heel.
Oh, no, I know. And he really is being wasted. He looks great, but he's just...
He does look great.
No charisma. You know, he's not used... You know, they don't let him emote anything. He's just out there carrying the flag. They really missed the boat. This is someone they could have really probably gotten some good mileage out of during this time, especially after losing Terry and Dory Funk. You know, just another Southern bruising heel that they could have used out there. So, yeah, I thought this was kind of a missed opportunity by them.
Yeah. I mean, like, Slater seemed like a good Bobby guy, you know, or maybe even a...
No, maybe a Jimmy Hart.
A Jimmy Hart guy.
I think he fits in good with Jimmy Hart. He could have been part of that whole stable. Stick him with Morocco and Orton, you know, fighting with Piper. Like, I think that could have been a good use of him.
Oh, absolutely. I think so, too. I just like Dick Slater's better heel. This was a throwaway match at the end. Nothing crazy here. Just to fill the night out, fill the 90 minutes out. So, nothing much to say. Half star.
All right, and that's it. Vince and Jesse wrap up the show. We are out for another Saturday night's main event. Any final thoughts? So obviously we'll get to the awards, but I thought it was a really good show.
I'm as we go through the awards, of course, we'll do our grade last. I may inflate this a little bit. This was a really fun show, top to bottom. A lot of good character involvement, a lot of good in-ring work. We had two heels actually make the audience kind of earn their cred as to who they like better. We had a great tag match. We had a hot Piper. We had a world title match. We had all the makings of a fun weekend holiday wrestling show. So I liked it a lot. As we do the awards, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to grade it yet, but we'll see. It depends how we do at the end of the awards.
All right. Well, the match of the night, I think, is easy. A choice here, Jake Roberts and Randy Savage.
No doubt. No doubt. Hearts and Bees, number two. But yes. this match beats it by a scoosh.
I went with Coco and Volkov for the worst match. I wanted to go more with the Morocco, but that was kind of more of a fun squash, and I really hated the finish for Coco.
Yeah, it was dumb, and Nikolai looked terrible, so I agree. Yep.
MVP, I went with Jake. I thought Savage was great, too, but I thought Jake, this was really like a coming out for him. I thought he worked his ass off. He hung in with Savage, and he got himself over as a star on the level of Savage. So I thought he had more to gain, and he cashed in and really presented himself as a guy that could eventually become a big star. The crowd is behind him. He felt like a big deal. I thought this was a great use of Jake, and I thought he delivered on the ask, which was to have a great match and don't shit the bed.
Yeah, I'm torn right now, though. I love the pick of Jake. I want to give it to Herc, though.
Yeah?
He worked his ass off, you know?
Yeah, but he wasn't the best part of the show. I think.
No, but I mean, I'll give it to Jake. And I'm not faulting Jake at all. I mean, I knew going in Jake and Savage is going to be great, but pleasant surprise. I'm going to give a little honorable mention to Herc for being a solid, you know, going with Hogan and going along with the way the match went, really getting the crowd going. So I'm going to give an honorable mention to Herc. But yeah, no, Jake was fantastic. Went along with Savage. That match, that whole package was tremendous.
All right, the Elmer for the worst worker. I thought this is pretty clearly easily Nikolai Volkov. Yeah, he was terrible in there.
He was horrendous. Yeah, he's the first guy, and I'll say this, JR, quickly. You talked about 87.
Yeah.
He might be one of those casualties, even though he sticks around for a while. I think you're going to see a lot of that in 1987. Guys that just now suddenly look dated.
Yeah, I mean, he's never been great, but he's quickly fading. You know, the team with Sheik is pretty much done. He's just kind of going nowhere fast. So we'll see how things go into 87 for him. But he's slipping down the ladder very quickly.
Yep.
Best moment, I went with the crowd chanting DDT. I thought that was a great moment.
Yep.
It really
yep.
established Jake as a star. It made it feel like a big deal. And this was kind of Jake's coming out party for me. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. The crowd chanting a finisher, again, something you normally didn't notice in 1986.
Right.
This
Especially
LA
for
crowd.
A heel. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I had to give the LA crowd some pops here. I mean, usually California crowds blow, but they really worked. They really had things in control. They had things their way tonight. Mm-hmm. So I applaud them.
All right. And finally, the Arcidi Award. To me, another easy one. I went with Hercules. He was juiced and gassed up beyond belief in this one.
But it didn't hinder him.
No.
It didn't hinder him in the match, though. But
no,
he was definitely blown up. There's no doubt.
All right, final grade. So back in October, I went with a 7 for that Saturday Night event, and I think this was about on par with that one. I thought, you know, that was considered one of the best of all time. I think this is right up there with it. Tremendous show. I went with a 7 out of 10 as well. It flew by. I do wish, like, those last two matches kind of stunk, and it's such a small part of the show. I'm not going to ding too badly. I wish maybe they combined those two. But that four-match stretch from the beginning through the tag was excellent.
I was going to go with 7 when we started the awards, and I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to agree with you. The show was a lot of fun. I mean, look, we don't get a lot of 3-star matches on our house shows. 2 stars usually is a treat for us. Yet, I mean, 2 3-star matches, a great Piper Brawl win, the great vignette with the awesome song.
Yes.
You know, Hogan, you know, it's been a treat for us. When was the last time we had back-to-back, you know, vaults with Hogan? Been a while.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see, and nice to get a title match as well. Everything worked here. Again, a nice, fun, you know, happy holiday weekend show that really delivered entertainment-wise. So easily 7 out of 10 for me. Almost 7.5, but not quite. 7 out of 10.
Yeah, no, it's up there. It's really, really good. Kind of a forgotten one, that Savage Jake match. I know it kind of gets talked about, but you know, it's really, really damn good. It's worth checking.
I think if it's on the set.
Oh, I think it definitely is because they talk about it. Jake tells a story. I doubt they talked about it and didn't show it.
Let's see. Oh, it's on the Best of Science main event. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
All right, that'll do it. So fun episode there, Scott. I enjoyed talking about that one. Yep. We'll be back next week looking at the December 86 MSG show. Our buddy Pete, formerly of Titans, now from the World Cast, looking at World Class Wrestling on the World Class Championship Wrestling on the PWO feed, Pro Wrestling Only. So check that out, of course. Great show with him and our buddy Kelly and Johnny Sorrow. We're checking out. He'll be here next week as Kelly's on vacation, so we'll welcome Pete in to talk some MSG. And of course, check out everything else. Subscribe to all our feeds, the PlayStation Nation Wrestling feed, PlayStation Nation Pop, Wrestling Only. Leave feedback there. You can rate us and leave comments and let us know how you're doing. And that helps get the show some rub as well. PlayStation.com/Amazon for your shopping needs. Download our free ebooks on the side. Jeff Jarvis is our buddy, helps us out with that. You can check those out there. We have, what, pay-per-views through 90 into early 96, the first 2 years of Raw, all the Saturday Night's Main Events, so all the Saturday Night's Main Events as well. Did I say that twice? I'm done.
we have Science Main Events, everybody. Just yeah. It's there.
And a Science Main Event as well. So be sure to check all those out. I'm done. Been a long day. So we'll be back next week with the December 86. We'll wrap up the year. Until then, that's God. I'm Justin. We're out. See ya.
I'm got nobody. Oh, and there's nobody just for me. There's nobody just for me. I'm so sad and lonely. Sad and lonely, sad and lonely. Want some sweet mama? Come take a chance with me, 'cause I ain't so bad then. And I'll sing her sweet love song. Oh, I love the time. She will only be, only be. Baldy, bozy, but blib up.
I ain't got nobody.
Oh, and there's nobody to kiss for me. There's nobody to kiss for me. Nobody to kiss for me.
I ain't got nobody.
Nobody kiss for me. There's nobody kiss for me.
I'm so sad and lonely.
Oh, lonely, oh, lonely, lonely, lonely. Want some sweet mama come and rescue me, 'cause I ain't so bad. And I'll sing up.